I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are fluctuating near records, held down by a rout in energy producers after crude oil moved below $40 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate is trading down 3.6%, down $1.48, $40.12 right now on WTI. Gold up 0.2%, picking up 260 the ounce to 13.55. The 10-year down 11/32. The yield there 1.49%. NASDAQ up 21 points, 51.84, a gain of 0.4%. S&P 500 index down 3 to 21.70, a drop there of 0.2%. Dow Industrials down 36, a drop there also of 0.2%. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
You're listening to Taking Stock with Kathleen Hayes and Pim Fox on Bloomberg Radio.
In China, the Shanghai Composite closed down about 0.8%. And in China, the Official Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, the PMI, tracks the health of large and state-owned enterprises, came in at 49.9. And that compares to 50 that was logged in June. Here to tell us more about investing in China is Brendan Ahern. He is the Chief Investment Officer for Crane Shares, and he brought along his WeChat and his Didi. So he's here to tell us everything. Brendan, thanks for coming in. Let's start off with the bigger picture and the PMI report from China. What's that signaling to you?
Well, China is certainly affected by tepid global growth. Their export-driven manufacturing is going to be affected by weak demand both here in the United States as well as here in Europe. So I think it's not overly surprising that, to your point, the official from National Bureau of Statistics PMI was a little light. At the same time, we did have the Caixin PMI, which covers more small, medium enterprises, actually increased month over month, as well as I think for us as investors, what we really want to focus on is non-manufacturing PMI, which actually increased in the month of July.
Now, why do you want to focus on the non-manufacturing? Is China already so much like the United States where manufacturing is such a small part? Don't a lot of Chinese people still work in factories?
Well, 40% of GDP in 2015 came from the industrial sector, Kathleen. At the same time, 50% of 2015 GDP came from the service sector. So there's a lot of talk about China rebalancing. Our opinion is that a healthy part of the economy has rebalanced, and while part of China's economy faces tepid global growth, domestic consumption is doing quite well, and we as investors want to position ourselves in that sweet spot of the Chinese economy.
How do you invest in Chinese technology companies when it's impossible to really know as an amateur what is accurate, what's not accurate, and how to suss out the details from their annual reports?
Yeah, I mean, certainly standards in both Shanghai and Shenzhen, the two onshore markets, are catching up to where we are here in the West. At the same time, Hong Kong, as well as U.S.-listed Chinese companies, have to adhere to U.S. GAAP standards. They have to adhere to U.S. exchange listing standards. They're audited by the big four U.S. accounting firms. So we love the internet and e-commerce companies listed both in Hong Kong as well as here on the New York and NASDAQ exchanges.
I want to follow on this because I don't think it's just people. I don't think it's just, you know, the amateurs who have a tough time making sure they get a good view of China's books and what their companies are really doing. You're saying then that you trust the information they give to those international auditors. The international auditors actually go inside the companies, because there's been some high profile short sellers, as you know, mm-hmm. activists who have gone after some of the big
yes.
Chinese companies.
That is true. And I think this broader trend about domestic consumption in China, we would say even look at U.S. listed companies geared to the Chinese consumer, Nike, McDonald's, Apple. Who else has done very well recently? I think Nike's been a big standout. Starbucks, going from 2,500 to 5,000 stores over the next few years in China. You see it in the U.S. companies doing business there. We like holding the Chinese companies themselves, just for the reasons that Uber China had a little bit of a struggle as a foreign company operating in China.
Tell us a little bit about KWEB. This is the Crane Shares technology ETF. Largest holding there is Tencent, followed by Alibaba, Baidu, and JD.com.
This is really a fund geared to the domestic consumption trend, which increasingly takes place online. In China, your smartphone's your primary source of entertainment. While retail sales went up just about 11% in 2015, online retail sales went up over 30%. So not only in China are you using your cell phone for WeChat, the Facebook of China, for using Didi to order a taxi cab, but you're actually buying things as well.
Now, in particular with this deal where Didi ends up buying a chunk of Uber, Uber retains about 20% mm-hmm. of its company, a bruising battle. You can read all the phrases about how Uber just couldn't quite get it done. Was this a fair fight, or was Didi favored? Because as a Chinese company, talk to almost any U.S. company who's tried to do business in China, and they talk about how it is not a level playing field.
Going alone for any Western company in China where you're trying to displace a local company that employs tens of thousands of locals is going to be very difficult. A few weeks ago, we had Walmart.com, threw in the towel, partnered with JD.com. We've seen Dove, part of Unilever, tried to go into China alone, really struggled. Now Dove, as part of Alibaba's Taobao and Tmall e-commerce platforms, is doing very well. So where Didi had a very, very strong advantage is, one, the founder, she comes from chairman of Lenovo, is her father. One big part of Didi's success was in order to do an expense report in China, if you're an employee, Fa Piao is getting an official receipt that you can use to basically show that you paid for something. Uber China never was able to get that, so it put them to a big disadvantage in terms of getting corporate clients in China.
Now, you brought your WeChat already loaded on your mobile, and I'm wondering if you could tell people, how does WeChat manage or organize or help you organize your life?
It's more than just a Facebook, and it allows us to communicate friends, family, business partners in China. I'm able to, like a PayPal, to pay for goods and services. It's like an auto pay on my bank account where I can pay my utility bills. I'm able to buy mutual funds. I can literally move money into a money market fund out of my bank account via WeChat. There's so much more to this fintech that's actually, when I just got back from China about 3 weeks ago, people made fun of me for carrying a wallet. They said, that's so Western of you to have a wallet. And I do have a giant George Costanza-like wallet. At the same time, I was deemed an old person because I actually had physical cash. Everything is being done on your smartphone. QR codes, I can pay for Starbucks in China.
But you can do that here in the United States?
I don't think on one company's application, I don't think you can come close to doing what WeChat provides today.
And if the WeChat is another one of these Chinese companies, it basically got the implicit backing of the government, and there's so much interplay between people who are powerful in government now and whose kids started companies, et cetera, et cetera. You're sort of buying into this whole Chinese model of, if you're the dominant company, you're going to be supported, not real true competition like we understand in the United States.
I think there's instances where certainly Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent are very, very fierce rivals. A lot of what we're speaking about with WeChat is available on both Baidu as well as Alibaba. So they do compete very, very fiercely. It's very difficult for smaller players to compete against these big
Could
folks.
Baidu compete with Facebook?
No. Not today, not here in the U.S.
And WeChat, just to give you the detail, has over 1 billion accounts and 700 million active users in China. They've got 70 more million outside of China who are also using WeChat. So is WeChat going to be a global business, do you think?
Well, I think, Pim, first of all, only half a Chinese population has access to the internet today. That's an internet user.
So that's an opportunity, right?
So it's going to go into the rural areas. The tier one cities have a high utilization rate, but tier three, tier four cities, it's a very low internet penetration rate. China just passed 50%. The U.S. passed the 50% utilization rate in 2002. So it shows the upside to these companies. At the same time, Tencent did just buy Supercell, the Finnish game maker. That's the provider of the Clash of Clans.
And Tencent is the creator of WeChat.
Correct. Correct. Tencent's founders were really in online gaming and got into social media like Facebook. At the same time, they just, by buying Clash of Clans, they have 25 million global users outside of China. So they just picked up a healthy footprint for going global.
In terms of your ETF, what can we expect? How has it done over the past few years? I'm thinking you're whetting a lot of people's appetite for some kind of investment vehicle in China. What takes advantage of some of these big names you just mentioned?
Well, Kathleen, I think people would be surprised that today's actually the three-year anniversary of KWEB being listed on the NASDAQ exchange. We've actually beaten the S&P 500. Solely holding Chinese companies. At the same time, we're beating the largest China ETF by about 2,600 basis points. So it's really about orientating ourselves to this domestic consumption trend. That's the sweet spot of China that we want to hold. Export-driven manufacturing will come back, but probably not in the short term.
As a matter of fact, I was just looking on my Bloomberg at China retail sales. You can go to your eco page, browse for China, get right to those retail sales numbers coming up next week. They were as hot as 13%. Now they're down to about 10%. Still a very impressive number. Brendan O'Hearn, thanks so much for joining us. Chief Investment Officer at Crane Shares joining us right here in our New York studio. Kathleen Hayes along with Pim Fox. This is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.